going to be in the 39th Psalm. We've been going through the Psalms on Sunday night. And we're ready for Psalm 39. It's a fairly short psalm, but really good instruction in this psalm. I haven't normally done this, but this psalm begins to the chief musician, even to Jeduthun, I'm not sure the exact pronunciation of that. And I just thought I would read real quick in 1 Chronicles, the 25th chapter. You don't have to turn there if you don't want to, but You see these psalms that are to Asaph and to Jeduthun and so on. So in the very first verse of 1 Chronicles 25, it says, "Moreover, David and the captains of the host separated to the service of the sons of Asaph and of Heman and of Jeduthun, who should prophesy with harps, with psalteries, and with cymbals, and the number of the workmen according to their service was." And I'm not going to go on with that rest of that, but just wanted to point out that there were ones that were, this was their specialty, the music. And so David wrote these psalms, and then they were given to the ones who were to lead the music, if you will, and the worship and the praise for the children of Israel. And so when you see that, then you can know that there is some intent for that and some meaning for it. So I'm going to read, I'm just going to read a few verses at a time, I guess, in this psalm. Psalm 39, starting in verse 1. "I said, I will take heed to my ways, that I sin not with my tongue. I will keep my mouth with a bridle while the wicked is before me. I was dumb with silence. I held my peace even from good, and my sorrow was stirred." I thought this was interesting. This wasn't planned this way, but in our Sunday school, we've been studying, and I think today was the last one of them, but the take heeds that are in the New Testament, in particular Jesus and Paul. But notice here, he says, "I will take heed to my ways." He says that I sin not with my tongue. The tongue, as you're probably well aware, is the most difficult member. The third chapter of James is all about that. I'm not going to turn and read all that, but we've had a lot of thoughts along the way about the tongue and the power that it has and what it can do. And he says here, "I will take heed to my ways that I sin not with my tongue." In other words, pay attention. I've often thought that if we thought just a few minutes or a few seconds even before we said something, we might not always say it. Sometimes, and that's just kind of the way we are as human beings. Sometimes we just say something and then we might think about it. Sometimes you might think about it right as soon as you said it. But that's the strange thing about words, man. Once they're out, you can't get them back in. They don't go back. So this take heed is a thought about thinking about what we're going to say. And we've talked often about the importance of the tongue, because what comes out of our mouth is an indication of what's in our heart. I am going to read real quick in Proverbs 21:23, and again, you don't need to turn if you don't want to, but Proverbs 21:23, it says, "Whoso keepeth his mouth and his tongue keepeth his soul from troubles." And certainly the tongue can get us into trouble pretty quickly. Again, as I said, sometimes you say it and you realize you didn't really want to say that, or you realize that what you said was going to be in some way damaging. And so it's good for us to think with the psalmist here, with David, that to think about what we're saying before we say it. He says, "I will keep my mouth with the bridle while the wicked is before me." In other words, our words in front of the unbeliever are very important. I can't tell you how many times unbelievers have been turned away from the gospel message by the words of those who proclaim to be Christians. And so it's very important as God's children for us to consider and think about what we say in front of the unbelievers, because our desire and our intent should always be to lead them to the Lord. Now, that doesn't mean that when you say something about the Lord that they're just going to accept it. Many times it's not going to be accepted. But we just need to be careful about how we use our words in front of the unbeliever, because they do pay attention to what we say and what our words are and what they mean. And so he says here, I will take heed to my ways. Pay attention. This has been our topic for several Sundays now in the Sunday school, taking heed, paying attention, being aware of what is coming out of our mouth. Verse 2 says, I was dumb with silence. I held my peace even from good, and my sorrow was stirred. There's times when it's good to just not speak. Sometimes it's better just not to say anything. And he says here, I held my peace even from good. In other words, even though maybe you think there's something good to say, sometimes it's better to say nothing at all. And I know, you know, sometimes we read these things and we might not notice them right away, but every one of us is guilty of these things from time to time. If you go back to that thought in James, the third chapter, he says, is there anybody that doesn't offend with their mouth? Well, you're just not telling the truth. We all do it from time to time. But it's good for us to be reminded to think about and to consider what comes out of our mouth. My wife tells about me meeting my grandma. My dad's mom, and the story that she tells about grandpa. Now, my grandpa was a man of few words. Well, he was a man of few words unless he was in the pulpit. And then he was a man of many words when he was in the pulpit. He could talk a long time. But in general, if you sat with him in his house, he was just a man of few words. He didn't say a lot. And apparently when grandma first married him, she was struggling with that. And she mentioned, I guess, to a neighbor lady, if I remember right, and how she was struggling with the fact that grandpa didn't seem to talk very much. And as an older neighbor lady, as I understand it. And anyway, and the lady said, just remember, the fewer words he says, the fewer he has to take back. There's some truth in that. Sometimes we get going and we start saying things that we don't necessarily pay attention to. He says, I was done with silence. I held my peace, even from good. It's not always good to speak, even if we think we have something great to say. Sometimes it's better. I was thinking about this, by the way, in connection with our Lord, who stood before the council as they accused him and smacked him and spit on him and so on, and he said nothing. Now, you know, when I think about that, I'm always of the opinion that Jesus could clearly have said something very wise and good at that time. You don't have to do much more than just pay attention to what he does say in the Gospels. But he is quiet at that time. He keeps his mouth shut. I think there's a little bit of a lesson in there for us to pay attention to. Back in our chapter 39, verse 3 says, my heart was hot within me while I was musing. The fire burned. Then spake I with my tongue. So as the, you know, taking time to think about what we really should say. Sometimes we think we know what we want to say, or we think we have the right word fixed, but if we consider the situation that we're going to talk about, you know, our words should be words of encouragement and words that build people up. And that's not always what the first thing that comes to our mind is. But as we consider the situation that we're in, we might have the words that need to be said to encourage someone in some way. My thought is always that the best words to speak are the words from God's word. If we want to encourage someone or lift them up, build them up, that's the best place to go. Verse 4, he says, Lord, make me to know mine end and the measure of my days, what it is, that I may know how frail I am. Behold, thou hast made my days as an handbreadth, and mine age is as nothing before thee. Verily, every man at his best state is altogether vanity, Selah. It's one of those places where you're supposed to stop and think about what he just said. Lord, make me to know mine end and the measure of my days, what it is that I may know how frail I am. We often forget how few our days really are. I saw something, you know, Facebook is such a big thing nowadays, and people get on there and they argue about all sorts of things. And I saw something somebody wrote. This was clearly intended to be sarcastic or tongue-in-cheek, but it said, life is short. Make sure you spend as much time as possible on Facebook arguing politics with others. It's important for us to be reminded about how short our life is sometimes. You know, sometimes we don't like to think about that particular thought, but the psalmist's point here is that if we take consideration of how short our life really is, we might spend our days a little better. Life is fragile, as we all know. We've seen this many times over the years. Life is fragile. We don't know how many days we have. What we do know is that they're not very many. Even I saw an article just a couple days ago, some man died. He was, I believe, 115, 113, 115, something like that. At the time, he had been the oldest person alive that they knew of. That's what seems like a long time, 115 years. Seems like a long time, but it's really not. In the overall scope of time, that's not very much of anything. And so our days aren't very many, and so what are we going to do with them? He says in verse 5, behold, thou hast made my days as an handbreadth. Not very much, right? That's trying to capture some kind of measurement. You know, it's not very much. He says, mine age is as nothing before thee. He says, verily, every man at his best state is altogether vanity. Not much that we can say. What does James say in the fourth chapter of James? He says in verse 14, whereas ye know not what shall be on the morrow, for what is your life? It is even a vapor that appeareth for a little time and then vanisheth away. Appears for a little time and then vanishes away. Well, our time is short. And so what are we going to do with the time that we have? I think Erlene mentioned the passage this morning there in Ephesians that we should use our time wisely, knowing that the days are evil. We should use our time wisely. And so the thought here from David is that God would remind us, this should be our prayer, I guess, as well, that the Lord would remind us about the shortness of our days and the fragility of our lives so that we can use them wisely. And he says here, verily, every man at his best state is altogether vanity. This is not something most people want to hear, but there's several ways you can think about this, but really in this context, as I said, you know, you might live to be 115, but that's still nothing. It's still just a drop in the bucket. And no matter how great man thinks he is, at his very best, he's just not anything. Emptiness, vanity. And so something for us to think about. Our life is short. What are we doing with it? What are we, what is our time being spent with? You know, as another thought for us, by the way, isn't just how long we might live in terms of until our life is gone, but what about the coming of the Lord? How soon might that be? Well, it could be tonight. It could be before I finish this. I mean, I'd be okay with that personally, but so we need to consider the time frame that we have and apply ourselves to the spiritual things. Verse 6, it says, surely every man walketh in a vain show. Surely they are disquieted in vain. He heapeth up riches and knoweth not who shall gather them. Every man walketh in a vain show. In other words, as they try to do their thing and make themselves important. It's just vanity. And he heapeth up riches and knoweth not who shall gather them. All these men, I've talked about this before, you know, they're gathering up their wealth and they're going to leave someday and their wealth will be left here. And what is the value then? Well, if Jesus makes it very clear that if he speaks the parable there of the man with the barns who gathered, and he made bigger barns because he had so much, and he gathered and he sat back and said, oh, now I'm going to take my leisure because I've got so much. And his soul was required of him. What's that worth? Well, the heaping up of riches in this world won't be worth much because they'll just stay here. And someday they'll just all be gone. And so it's just a vanity. It's a waste of the time. And verse 7 says, now, O Lord, what wait I for? My hope is in thee. See, after all these thoughts that he has about his fragile life, I want to say something, I guess, about this top part of this, you know, about keeping quiet. It also occurred to me as I was reading all this that the psalmist, sometimes, you know, we need to be a little quiet before the Lord so that he can show us these things. And he's quiet, and then when he speaks, his request is, Lord, make me know mine end. And sometimes we need to be quiet before the Lord. Let our spirit settle and be quiet so that he can speak to us and show us some things. Sometimes we're kind of too busy. Even sometimes with the work of the Lord, sometimes we get too busy with that we're not even listening to him anymore. We need to have time to just let him speak to us. As we come into God's word, he just does that. He speaks to us as we allow him. And he says, now, Lord, what wait I for? In other words, what am I expecting? What is my expectation? I think this is interesting for David because David is the king. And David has all that he wants. I mean, he's wealthy and he's powerful. And what is his expectation? And this is the thing that I appreciate about David so much is for a person in his position, he always knows where he needs to go. And he says, my hope is in thee. Last week, we saw about his trust being in the Lord. At the end of the previous chapter, and he says, oh Lord, my salvation, at the end of that chapter, and he speaks to us there about his trust being in the Lord. And so he knows where to go. And he says, what do I wait for? What's my expectation? Well, my hope is in thee. What is our expectation? Is it something from this world? Something from men? Hopefully that our hope is also in the Lord. That's the only place for it to be. Verse 8 says, deliver me from all my transgressions. Make me not the reproach of the foolish. Another thing that David knew is he knew that he wasn't perfect. He had learned that quite well. But he also knew where to go for that deliverance as well. Deliver me from all my transgressions. Make me not the reproach of the foolish. Only the Lord can deliver us from our transgressions, from that old nature. We have a new nature, and as we yield to that, we always go to the Lord because that's the only place to be. Deliver me from all my transgressions. He says in verse 9, I was dumb. I opened not my mouth because thou didst it. He didn't have to say anything. He just recognized that God is the one that works. What can we say? Like I said, sometimes people just like to talk a lot or something. But what can we say? It is God's work. We can't take any credit for it. We can't bring it about ourselves. But we're simply before him, and we recognize that he's the one that does the work. He's the one that accomplishes that. Verse 10, he says, remove thy stroke away from me. I am consumed by the blow of thy hand. This goes clearly with the previous chapter. In chapter 39, that's how he starts out, is the heaviness of God's hand upon him. But he's not really complaining about this because he recognizes that he needs the correction. In verse 11, he says, When thou with rebukes dost correct man for iniquity, thou makest his beauty to consume away like a moth. Surely every man is vanity. God's hand upon us sometimes seems very heavy, and that's what we saw in the previous chapter, that seems very heavy. But we know that he is doing the work, and that's what we saw right above here. He is the one that is doing the work. Do we need correction? Yep, we need correction. And sometimes that correction seems heavy to us. Paul tells us in Hebrews there, he says that no correction at the present seems, you know, fun. My interpretation of what he says there, fun. But it's necessary, and it has a desired end. And so it works something in our lives. Verse 12, he says, "Hear my prayer, O Lord, and give ear unto my cry. Hold not thy peace at my tears, for I am a stranger with thee and a sojourner, as all my fathers were. O spare me that I may recover strength before I go hence and be no more." So he cries out to the Lord to give ear unto his cry. This isn't intended to imply that he didn't think God would hear him, but over and over we find this in David's Psalms that he writes these in this way: "Hear my prayer, O Lord, and give ear to my cry." He says, "Hold not thy peace at my tears." Sometimes it seems like the Lord is being quiet, not speaking. I think Kathy made a comment to one of my roommates from college about something that the Lord had done, and he said, "Yes, it seems like there's been a period of silence or something." I think is what he says. Silence. He said, "But the Lord it was always working." And so sometimes, you know, we're in that situation. It seems like the Lord's being silenced. It's like we don't hear, like he's not paying attention to us. But he really is. And he does hear. Sometimes we feel like we're in this place where we're a stranger and sojourner. But we can cry out to the Lord. The psalmist never quits crying out to the Lord. He never fails to do so. And we shouldn't either. No matter how, no matter what the situation we're in, no matter where we're at, I think some of this, you know, as David reflected on his life and the shortness of his life, sometimes it brings us to a place where it just feels like we can't go anywhere, we can't get anywhere, we can't do anything, and we need to just cry out to the Lord. And he says, "Hold not thy peace at my tears." Does it seem like the Lord's holding his peace sometimes? It does. And we need to cry out to him. He wants us to. I think sometimes the Lord is being quiet so that we will come to him and truly rely on him and recognize his hand in our lives. He says, "Oh, spare me that I may recover strength before I go hence and be no more." Clearly, David was at a place where he felt very low. And many times we find this with David. And it's really one of the things I appreciate about David, because he doesn't write his Psalms as though everything is perfect and rosy all the time. He really writes his Psalms from the perspective of an average, normal person who has really great days and great rejoicing and has some really low days. At times, David writes as though he's near death. And he cries out to the Lord. And, you know, we find ourselves in these same situations. We find ourselves in some days that are great and lots of rejoicing and praising. And then other days, it seems like it's a lot of heaviness and difficulty. And those days seem dark sometimes. But again, David always brings us to the same place. And this is what really matters for us to learn, which is to cry out to the Lord. To cry out to the Lord, no matter what the situation. Our praise and our rejoicing is in him. And on the cloudy days, so to speak, our cry is unto him. It's always unto him, because there's no other place to go and there's no other person that we can cry out to that can bring us the relief that we need. I'm going to quit here tonight. The next chapter just starts out. I don't know. The Holy Spirit puts these in order for us, obviously, but I just thought it started out really neat. I waited patiently for the Lord. You know, sometimes we're crying out to the Lord, and just as David is here, and it feels maybe like God is being quiet, holding his peace, but we wait patiently for his hand, and we will see it. We will see his hand. It's not always in the way we want. I think we had that thought this morning, you know, that, maybe I heard that somewhere else. Anyway, about putting God in a box. You know, sometimes we put God in the box we want him in, or we want to demand something from him the way we want it. But really, our attitude needs to be one of crying unto the Lord and patiently waiting for his working in his time and in his way. It always works out better that way. That's all I had tonight. I appreciate these songs. I think every time I say, "Oh, this one's great," they're all good, and I appreciate them all. But there's always encouragement in the Psalms, and always instruction for us. You know, thinking about the length of our days, that's something that not just the psalmist writes to us, but even like I said, Paul reminds us to be wise and use the time wisely that we have, because we don't know how long it is. Let's take prayer.